This is the Faith Conversations podcast. Here we bring people of faith to the table for honest and authentic conversations about personal faith journeys and what it is like to have a personal relationship with God. Hi, friends. Welcome to the Faith Conversations podcast. This is Jessica Cabrera, your host. We're so excited to have you here listening with us today. I am kicking off season 3 of the Faith Conversations podcast, interviewing some ministry leaders from my church. And I'm very excited about this because I just know that people who are dedicating their life to ministry have a story to tell. Today, I am here with Pastor Michael Coffey, who is the executive pastor of my church. And I don't know his story, but the reason I'm so excited to hear his story today is because my son, when he was in the high school ministry at our church, he's now off in college, but when he was in the high school ministry, he heard Pastor Coffey's testimony and came home and told me about it. It just really left an impression on him. And so ever since then, I've been thinking, oh, what a great way to be able to hear more about who the Lord is and what God has done in his life. So Pastor Coffey, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jessica.
I really cannot wait to hear more. I want to just start off. Let's just talk about your background. You know, anything about your personal background and also your faith background. How did you come to faith?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. A lot of this is, of course, with the retrospective view of being an older man and now, now a Christian. I can see the hand of God working in my family's lives for a number of decades. Both my grandfathers became lay pastor preachers in a sort of primitive Alabama rural sort of area. My father's father came to faith because he had an accident at a sawmill where it actually maimed his good right hand, sliced away most of it, which put him on a sort of a disability path for the rest of his life. And I think that crisis worked in his life so that he became a pastor, preacher at different sort of rural churches. The interesting thing is he couldn't read or write at all, not a word. But we'd have people read the scriptures to him, and he would memorize them, and then he would preach from the passages that he memorized. My mother's father, by Alabama standards at the time, was a very well-educated man. He graduated from high school, and he also had a crisis in his life when he lost a child to an early death.
Oh,
and
goodness.
He did a lot of wrestling with God and followed a similar path that he entered into a sort of a lay pastor preaching ministry. And so both my parents had seen their fathers with some struggles and then coming to the Lord. My father wasn't particularly interested, I don't think. It caused a hardship in his life that because his father had become maimed and couldn't work anymore, he left school after just the second grade, actually went to work at the same sawmill where my grandfather suffered his injury, and eventually became a truck driver, which served him in some capacity for the rest of his life, whether as a city bus driver or eventually a long-distance truck driver. But it's important to note that they did have parents that had encounters with God, even though in my father's case it wasn't something that he was particularly interested in. Not sure my mother was very interested either. She'd married a man at the start of World War II, divorced him after the war was over. Met my father while he was driving a city bus in Gadsden, Alabama. He was a married man at the time, had a little girl. She basically set her hat for him, decided that she would bust up the marriage and marry him. She did, and they did get married. I didn't know my half-sister until later on as an adult. Met her whenever I became an adult, because there was such bad blood because of the way the marriage ended and stuff. Very fine, sweet Christian lady. She taught school for 30 years, and so it's been fun to get to know her as an adult over the years. But my parents, like a lot of folks back in that time era, late 50s, early 60s, would drop my older brother, myself, and my younger sister off at a local Baptist church just to get some indoctrination, which I'm sure they probably thought was necessary. I'm not sure why they thought it was necessary. They didn't go to church with us. They would just drop us off.
It was like something that you're supposed to do with your kids or something.
Right. And they would pick us up.
Yeah.
But the pastor there at that Baptist church, it wasn't that small of a church in Atlanta, which is where we were living at the time, took notice that, okay, there's three kids that come here, but we never see any parents here. He decided to come out and visit with the family, which I appreciate the courage and the initiative that he took. Mm-hmm. My father had struggled with alcoholism the entire time that I'd known him as a little boy. Like a lot of people that struggle with alcoholism, they can kind of try to be silly, the life of the party, or they can be kind of mean. The latter was my father. Grew up in a home with a lot of violence, a lot of trying to protect my mother from the violence that would come when he was drinking. And so the night that this pastor just showed up at the front step wanting to introduce himself and visit with the family, my father was drunk, and I took my little baby sister back to the back of the house because I honestly thought this guy might lose a couple of teeth here in a second. And I was back there for a while with my little sister, and it was getting later and later, and finally I think I put her to bed, as I recall, and went creeping toward the front of the house, and saw the pastor kneeling on the living room floor with my mother there. My father was lying on the sofa, but he was crying, and I didn't quite know what was going on. It was a little bit disconcerting, so I just kind of went back and went to bed. But the next morning, when we were all sitting down for breakfast, for the first time that I ever remember, he insisted on saying grace over the meal. And then after we ate breakfast, he told us to all get dressed, that we were going to go to church. And he had a salvation experience that night, mainly through the initiative of this pastor. And I'll give him credit. He really never went back on that. He was always fairly bold in his faith after that. He also quit drinking cold turkey, which certainly got all of our attention.
How old were you?
I was about 12.
Okay. And your little sister?
She was about 10.
Okay.
And I had an older brother. He was about 13.
Okay.
And so they would take us to church after that. I was happy that the violence had stopped and that something seemed to have happened to the old man, but it wasn't necessarily something I wanted, and I didn't come to faith for many, many years after that. In fact, I was the very last person in my family to come to faith, but I really never doubted that something supernaturally had happened to my father and that it, and as a result, changed the dynamic of our family life.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, it, and honestly, the generational pattern here of these transformative experiences in these men in your family is really fascinating, to see how God has moved in for, you know, in both sides of the family of a marriage, right? So like these are two families not connected to one another until your parents met. And then also in your own father. I think that's incredible. So it sounds like you observed this, you knew that there was something supernatural. You might have referred, you know, you knew the concept of God. You had been dropped off and then started attending the Baptist church, I suppose. So you were being introduced to scripture maybe, or to concepts of Jesus, but you weren't really, that wasn't something that you were necessarily, that wasn't transforming your life. You weren't surrendering to this concept or this idea or this person of Jesus. You were just an observer at this point in time. Is that right?
And for several years after that.
What would you say changed for you?
My older brother, my sister, others eventually did become believers as well. And so I had the entire family sharing their faith with me. I smile because, you know, before you become a Christian, according to the scriptures, you're spiritually dead. You know, what does a dead person have to offer to most conversations or something? But when they would be talking to me, I showed remarkable insight for somebody who is spiritually dead, because I would tell them, don't you get this? This isn't just accept Jesus so you don't go to hell. If I ask him into my life like y'all say y'all have done, then he gets me, and I have no interest in him getting me. So I smile now and look back at that pretty astute observation for somebody
you knew the truth, right?
Who was spiritually dead at the time. But my mother's mother, I'd always been a little bit closer to her father and mother, and She developed cancer, and back in that era, the cancer treatments were nowhere near as sophisticated as they are now. And I was actually at the University of Georgia attending school, got a phone call from my brother to tell me that she'd been diagnosed, basically a version of stage 4 cancer, was not expected to live very long.
And was this undergraduate?
Mm-hmm.
What age person were you at this time?
Well, maybe, right, like around 20.
20,
you know.
19, 20, something like that. Okay.
And I was actually at a party in my own apartment, and I was a little bit drunk, just to be honest with you. And so I was sad by the news, but I went outside and kind of made a fumbling attempt at a prayer, and then just sort of rudely announced that this is stupid, and went back inside to the party. Which not too long after that, whenever I went home from a break on college, cut to the chase, my family excitedly met me and told me that my grandmother had been diagnosed as cancer-free. While the doctors had offered absolutely no hope, now they could not find a trace of cancer in her body. And it wasn't an audible voice, you know, from God, but it was a very clear impression. It was almost like God said, "Do I have your attention now?" And the answer was yeah. And so right around that time, Jesus Christ Superstar was being played on different things and on Broadway, and some songs on the radio. And back then, everybody had their LP platters and their big stereos and their speakers that were half a wall size,
right,
and stuff. And I would sit around, I'd listen to that rock opera. And that made me wonder that, well, so was he really just a deluded guy, or was he who he said he was according to the scriptures? I began to read the Gospels, and it wasn't long after that that the person of Christ captured both my attention and my heart, and I became a believer. Last one in the family to come to faith.
Yeah. I can just see that there was, it was the Lord like drawing you close to him over a long period of time. I'm reflecting on a few things in my own personal life. I became curious, and I was what I might call now seeking, but at the time I was really kind of debating, you know, but it was in my closet. I was in my closet just talking to God, kind of I want you, I think that you're good and you'd probably be good for me, but I don't want to give anything up for you. I don't want this full surrender where you have control of my life. And so I had this awareness that if I came to the Lord and surrendered my life to Jesus, that I would no longer have control of my life. And I did not want that.
Oh, I understand.
And yeah.
I find it is so true of him as a very gracious God that he kind of meets us where we are and just kind of doesn't force us at all. He's very patient, keeps giving you more and more proof or evidence or anything else that you need at that point to really understand more and more how much he loves you.
And that's love. That's the thing that was really kind of standing out to me as well, is that it's out of his love. In my case, he kept on pursuing me, and the love that he expressed to me to be able to come back with me over and over again until I came to the place where I realized, oh my gosh, this is the safest place I could ever be, mm-hmm. you know, in surrender to him, in under his control. That's where I want to be. That's the safest place I could ever be. And so I can see that journey that you were going on as well. I also can relate personally. It's actually through my son who's when he was 7 years old, he was expressing interest in Jesus, and he would ask questions, and periodically I would share with him who Jesus was, and I would talk to him about the spiritual realm, and I'd talk to him about this physical realm, and how we are spiritual people as well as physical people, and ask him, is this a decision that you would like to make right now? And he would look at me and say, nope, not yet. And he did that 4, 5, 6 times. He just kept on saying, not yet. And I said, okay.
He would get that you respected that.
He would get his questions answered, and then he would just be like, yep, I'm not ready for that yet. And then one day he came to me and he said, Mom, I'm ready now, you know? So I can see similarities, even though the generations, you know, even the date on the calendar was so different from your story to mine. God is the same. And so I love hearing those similarities. So I want to go to this moment in time that you say eventually he got your heart, right? Can you unpack that for us a little bit? Like, was there a moment? Was it a season? Was there a certain time of prayer? I mean, do you have any memory of a time when you say, he got my heart and I became a believer?
That's a very good question. I appreciate it. Yeah, unlike a lot of people, there wasn't a moment where I prayed a prayer, asked Jesus into my heart, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just a more firm, growing conviction that I really believed what I was reading in the New Testament, that he really was God, that he came to earth looking for people who had no way of finding God on their own. He died for me. I really understood all that, and I thought, well, I accept that. I'm not fighting against that anymore. Right. I'm not kicking against that anymore. So it was more of a, but it was all in the space of just about a month or so. It all kind of solidified then. So when people talk about they had this moment and they prayed a prayer or something like that, that wasn't me. But at the same time, it was a pretty clear sort of time period where I just truly believed who he was and what he'd done for me. My wife, I met her. I immediately graduated from college and went on staff with an organization now called CREW. Back then it was called Campus Crusade for Christ. Mm-hmm. So I spent 5 years on their staff, and I met my wife while I was working with them. She was a staff person too, and that was good. That was a good thing for me early on in my, journey to become a missionary and on some college campuses, and also for a brief while in the country of Turkey. I came back from Turkey fairly thin. I'm surprised that Laura gave me the time of day when she first laid eyes on me there. But that was a good training ground, quite frankly. And after 5 years on staff with them, I went away to seminary. And then after seminary, 4 years of that, I went into the Army as a military chaplain. And I did that for 30 years. So there's a constancy to the way my ministry life has gone since my coming to faith, that if knowing Christ was the most important thing that ever happened to me. It's kind of what I've always wanted to spend my life sharing and talking to people about. So those are kind of the ministry paths and the career paths that I've chosen ever since then.
I'm curious about something. So I know you to be a very smart person. And that's probably just because I'm like from the cursory, you know. Also, for anyone listening, there are a lot of really smart people that are leaders at this church. But I do. I mean, there's it's fascinating to me. I love to meet people who are smart and intellectual. I'm curious, when you did you say UGA or at a school in Georgia? UGA?
University of Georgia.
Okay, UGA. When you were at UGA before you became a believer, did you have academic pursuits? Were you a person that was interested in study, or, you know, were you analytical, those kinds of things?
Yes, I'm the first coffee on the family tree to ever graduate from a college. Even though I had an older brother, I had to pay my own way through, so I was working my way through college. So there wasn't a lot of time to be wasting if you're actually footing the bill yourself and doing it. My original plan was to become an attorney until I became a Christian toward the end of my junior year. And then, like I said, that changed a lot of life goals, and I decided to go into missionary work at first with Crew. So I appreciate the compliment that you think I'm smart.
I mean, I'm just being honest. But I mean, I'm just curious because I think that God has, you know, put very unique gifts and talents and abilities within each of us. And he's cultivating those things in us even before we know him, you know. And so I was just curious if you had academic pursuits before you became a believer, if that was something that you felt, you know. And it sounds like you were maybe even a little bit out of place for your family because of your desire to get higher education and so forth.
I think there's some truth to that. Laura laughs. The story I've told her is that when I'd be growing up, you know, small kid, even through teenage years, I'd be reading a book somewhere and the family would call to me from the other room about, "Michael, quit reading, come in here and watch TV with the rest of us."
Okay. All right. You are exposing the truth that I was looking for. Thank you so much. So it was part of you, who you were, obviously, before you were called into ministry. But then as you, I'm also observing from this story that you must be a person that once you are certain of something, once you believe it to be true, you just go all in, you know? I mean, because to turn and start with Crew right soon after you came to faith. But what I'm hearing is that you're reading the Gospels and you realize, oh my goodness, this is true. I believe it. Well, if it's true, everyone needs to know about it, right? And you just immediately just knew that you had to go in that direction. So I think that's also very interesting to me. Thank you for sharing about that. All right, let's talk about God in a bigger context for a minute, because you've now lived a lot of life, right? I mean, you obviously told us kind of how this all started and the fact that you were married and you worked for Crew and you were a missionary in Turkey, and then you went into the military and worked as, was it chaplain? Were you chaplaincy in the military? And so you lived a lot of life. If you could just kind of almost, I visually imagine hovering over the whole gamut of the life and saying, what have I learned about God? What would you say are the biggest things that surface for you about God's character after the life that you've been in relationship with him this long?
When Moses is up on the mountain and he wants to see God, and he's told, well, nobody can see God's face and live, but I'll hide you over here in the cleft of this rock as I pass by. And when he passes by, he's proclaiming about himself, slow to anger, merciful, long-suffering. Those are the things that God is saying about himself his servant Moses while he's even protecting him while he's passing by. That's what I've experienced over the years as I've read, reread the scriptures, communed with God, practiced my spiritual disciplines that I practice, he's always wanting to meet with me. He never fails to meet with me. He always reveals more of himself to me. And I need a merciful Savior. Let me say that again. I need a merciful Savior. And he has certainly been that to me. And so he's long-suffering, he's merciful, he's slow to anger. He's been all that with me, and certainly wiser than I am. So I look back over my life now, like I said, as an older man, and I can see the goodness of God there, guiding me, helping me, instructing me, comforting me, and times of distress and some troubles and stuff. I mean, you don't go into the U.S. Army even as a chaplain. It's not a Christian organization. You're working for Caesar, basically. But it's a different sort of ministry to do that. It takes a special person, I think, to be able to navigate that you're serving God, but you're actually working for Caesar every day, of in my case, for 30 years. And so you need a lot of wisdom. You need a lot of help in doing that. Be real easy to lose yourself in that, just seeking the next promotion or something like that, so that you don't become much spiritually good after a while, because you either have to be promoted up continually or you're going to be put out of the military. But I didn't want that. I didn't want to get to the end of my military career, much less my life, and think, oh, well, what have I done? What have I accomplished? I wanted to still be somebody that was serving the Lord. So he's been all that to me, from long-suffering to merciful, slow to anger, to certainly all-wise, and he's ever ready to meet with me. There's never been a time that he didn't want to just commune with me. It's usually me that is hesitant sometimes to do the
I know. And I love the image of Moses that you've painted, and particularly how the character of God has not changed. And isn't it amazing how God was proclaiming his character to Moses in that moment, and all of the things that he testifies about himself to Moses in that moment are the things that you've experienced in your lifetime here on earth. And as you're sharing it with me, I've experienced those things too. And I could say the same things about God's character. And you and I don't even really know each other, you know? And I just love, I love that. I love how he is so consistent, and from generation to generation and from person to person. And if you listen to this podcast and all of the episodes in whatever order you want to listen to them, you're going to find that everyone is so different and their stories are really, really different, but God is the same. And it's just absolutely incredible. So tell me, is there any type of have you had any experience that you want to share? Would you like to talk with us as we're just wrapping up about the, you mentioned spiritual disciplines a minute ago, just anything else you'd like to share about your experience with God over these years?
Well, I think that my relationship with God, like anybody that seeks after him, grows and deepens and becomes more satisfying with time. I think a lot of us, when we first experience the mercy of God and we're forgiven, we're still a little bit more of a works mentality, not wanting to upset him, not wanting to displease him.
And we're thinking that he's displeased with us the minute we mess up, right?
And so it's a little bit warped that way. I think over time, and a lot of it comes, I'm sure, from family of origin. Even though my father became a fine Christian man and an outspoken witness for Christ, there's a sense that I had to learn that, whether it's just me confessing that once again I've sinned, Lord, or coming to him in my confusion or whatever, when I had my own children, and now that I have seven grandchildren, there's a sense that when they come to me and they're upset and they're crying and they've wrapped their whole body around my leg or something, and they're crying, and I'm just kind of gently comforting them and patting them. That was, I think, something that was years in the making for me that I am so grateful for. And it's an image that I use now in my life as a 71-year-old man that I like to keep short accounts with the Lord. Unfortunately, I sin every day, usually several times a day. But the thing that God loves about people like David, a man after his own heart, is that he just kept really short accounts of the sin. He didn't argue and try to justify it. He just admitted it, and God loved that and said, "Now that's a man after my own heart." And so I kind of picture myself wrapping myself around God's supernatural
leg
and just pouring out my whole soul, or crying about yet again, here's another confession, the same sin once again, or whatever. And it's a real comfort to me to know that his hand's there patting me on the back and basically saying to me when I confess it, "What sin?" Kind of like I am able to comfort my grandchildren, or were able to comfort my own children back when they were little. I think that's been, as simple as that is, that's been one of the main growing edges for me over the years.
I love that. And in that vein, what would you say if there's someone listening right now who's just really struggling to believe? They're still in that stuck space, right?
I'd say good for you that you're struggling with it and you're not quite sure. And that's okay. I would commend that what I did seems to me to be an excellent path for anybody. That if you are stuck, I would tell you to discipline yourself to slowly read through the gospel accounts of Jesus. Get to know the Jesus that he chose to reveal to all people for all time through the gospel. Start with something simple like the Gospel of Mark. It's very action-oriented. Mark uses the word "immediately" all throughout it, and immediately Jesus did this, and immediately this happened, and then, and so it's a very fast-moving gospel, easy to read. But along the way, I trust that he would reveal himself to you as he did to me, and then once you truly see him for who he is, and always has been, and always will be, then I think make the choice. Choose to embrace him. Choose to follow him. It's the best decision you'll ever make. Here, we're all, we get it kind of inverted. You know, we think that we're in the land of the living on the way to the land of the dying, but in reality, we're in the land of the dying on the way to the land of the living. The question is, where are you going to live? I'd rather live with him.
Amen to that. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. This has been an amazing conversation. I've loved to learn a little bit more about the background of your life and the work that God has done and the way that we see his hand and his power demonstrated through your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jessica. I've enjoyed it very much too. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Go to the description of today's episode to find more information about what we discussed. If you like this podcast, please click follow, share it with a friend, or leave us a review. And get excited, because new episodes release every week.